painted with a complicated skull and bones motif. That wasn't the most unpleasant thing about it. Mort groaned inwardly. He couldn't see any sand in there. The smaller glass beside it was quite plain and unadorned. Mort reached for it. "May I?" he said.
"Be my guest."
The name Mort was engraved on the top bulb. He held it up to the light, noting without any real surprise that there was hardly any sand left. When he held it to his ear, he thought he could hear, even above the ever-present roar of the millions of lifetimers around him, the sound of his own life pouring away. He put it down very carefully. Death turned to Cutwell.
"Mr. Wizard, sir, you will be good enough to give us a count of three."
Cutwell nodded glumly.
"Are you sure this couldn't be all sorted out by getting around a table?" he began.
"No."
"No."
Mort and Death circled one another warily, their reflections flickering across the banks of hourglasses. "One," said Cutwell. Death spun his scythe menacingly. "Two." The blades met in midair with a noise like a cat sliding down a pane of glass.
"They both cheated," said Cayley.
Isabel nodded.
"Of course," she said.
Mort jumped back, bringing the sword round in a too slow arc that Death easily deflected, turning the parry into a wicked low sweep that Mort avoided only by a clumsy standing jump. Although the scythe isn't preeminent among the weapons of war, anyone who has been on the wrong end of, say, a peasant's revolt will know that in skilled hands it is fearsome. Once its owner gets it weaving and spinning, no one, including the wielder, is quite certain where the blade is now and where it will be next. Death advanced, grinning. Mort ducked a cut at head height and dived sideways, hearing a tinkle behind him as the tip of the scythe caught a glass on the nearest shelf. In a dark alley in Moorpork, a night soil entrepreneur clutched at his chest and pitched forward over his cart. Mort rolled and came up swinging the sword double-handed over his head, feeling a twang of dark exhilaration as Death darted backwards across the checkered tiles. The wild swing cut through a shelf. One after another, its burden of glasses started to slide towards the floor. Mort was dimly aware of Isabel scurrying past him to catch them one by one. Across the disc, four people miraculously escaped death by falling. And then he ran forward, pressing home his advantage. Death's hands moved in a blur as he blocked every chop and thrust, and then changed grip on the scythe and brought the blade swinging up in an arc that Mort sidestepped awkwardly, nicking the frame of an hourglass with the hilt of his sword and sending it flying across the room. In the Ramtop Mountains, a Tharga herder, searching by lamplight in the high meadows for a lost cow, missed his footing and plunged over a 1,000-foot drop. Cutwell dived forward and caught the tumbling glass in one desperately outstretched hand, hit the floor and slid along on his stomach. A gnarled sycamore mysteriously loomed under the screaming herder and broke his fall, removing his major problems, death, the judgment of the gods, the uncertainty of paradise, and so on, and replacing them with the comparatively simple one of climbing back up about 100 feet of sheer icy cliff in pitch darkness. There was a pause as the combatants backed away from each other and circled again, looking for an opening.
"Surely there's something else we can do," said Cayley.
"Mort will lose either way," said Isabel, shaking her head.
Cutwell shook the silver candlestick out of his baggy sleeve and tossed it thoughtfully from hand to hand. Death hefted the scythe threateningly, incidentally smashing an hourglass by his shoulder. In Bess Pelagic, the Emperor's chief torturer slumped backwards into his own acid pit and took another swing, which Mort dodged by sheer luck, but only just. He could feel the hot ache in his muscles and the numbing greyness of fatigue poisons in his brain, two disadvantages that Death did not have to consider. Death noticed.
"Yield," he said. "I may be merciful."
To illustrate the point, he made a round-arm slash that Mort caught clumsily on the edge of his sword. The scythe blade bounced up, splintered a glass into 1,000 shards. The Duke of Stowhelit clutched at his heart, felt the icy stab of pain, screamed soundlessly, and tumbled from his horse. Mort backed away until he felt the roughness of a stone pillar on his neck. Death's glass, with its dauntingly empty bulbs, was a few inches from his head. Death himself wasn't paying much attention. He was looking down thoughtfully at the jagged remains of the Duke's life. Mort yelled and swung his sword up to the faint cheers of the crowd that had been waiting for him to do this for some time. Even Albert clapped his wrinkled hands. But instead of the tinkle